Mount Cheehaw is my Everest, and the Coosa is my now. Alabama's where I was born and raised.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. 36 minutes after the hour on this Tuesday afternoon. Coming up tomorrow on the program from the Heritage Foundation, Hans Spakowski will be with us. We also got State Senator David Sessions joining us, and what will be a regular feature on Wednesdays is Yellowhammer News' Sean Ross. He'll be with us, so make sure that you tune in for that. Joining us now, however, I'm very excited to introduce my next guest. He is serves the fine folks in District 105. State Representative Chip Brown joins us on air. Representative, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Jeff. Thank you. It's great to be with you. I'm excited about your new show down here in Mobile.
Yeah, hopefully it all goes well. It's a work in progress, but I'm feeling pretty good about it. The real sucker here is Sean Sullivan for actually putting me behind a microphone here. I don't know what he was thinking, but we'll keep that between you and I. So how are things?
Doing great. We're in uncertain, uncharted times, of course, with the COVID situation going on, national elections, and my district, in District 105, we have two elections today, actually. We've got two votes for, and Grand Bay, we have a vote dealing with increasing the fire district fees, and then also in Fowl River have a vote today on increasing the fire district fees.
Well, that, stuff like that's very, very important. I always wonder, though, you look at those elections and maybe you could kind of tell, are people willing to come out to the polls and see, you know, because there's all that fear right now about, you know, COVID-19, obviously. But these are important, not just because of what they do and what they mean to the community, but it's also, I think, a good kind of indicator of kind of how the public feels about stuff.
Well, that's true. And, you know, those fire districts do such a great job. And in District 105, we only have two cities. We have the town of Dauphin Island and right. The city of Bilobattery. And the rest of it is unincorporated areas along the bay and then Grand Bay and up in Irvington. And those are totally reliant on volunteer fire departments. So they rely on a fee that you pay on your property taxes, and So that's how they operate. They don't get money from the cities because there's no
sales tax that's being collected. So you have to figure out how to get that money other way. So most people wouldn't think of your house district as a rural district, but it largely is.
Yeah, it really is. I touch the city of Mobile. Actually, the only thing that I have that's in the city of Mobile is Grand Point Apartments that are. We're at the best spot of any apartment around. It's right on Dog River in Mobile Bay. Yeah. And that's in the city, but everything else is not. It's all county, and I don't see it changing.
Well, it's certainly been that way a while. Let's talk about how are things going in your district. We talk about, I mean, the economy for South Mobile County is much different than anywhere else in the state, I think. It's got a little bit of everything, bedroom community, agriculture, obviously seafood, a big deal, tourist economy. How is that all shaping up?
Well, you know, on the tourism side, right now Dauphin Island is really doing well. I mean, you know, people pent up not being able to travel for so long, that the rental market is doing well. Restaurants are open. They had some staffing issues there for a while. Of course, all restaurants are having those problems across the country. But the economy down there is really rocking and rolling. And seafood industry took some hits, of course, but all that is starting to bounce back. And they need a lot of help with deregulation and preventing imports from China and that sort of thing on the shrimping side. But agriculture. It's the same way. I mean, people have to eat. And, they were affected by a lot of the restaurants closing, of course. But I would say things are picking up for sure.
Well, let's talk about that China element. Because, you know, right now there is this push nationally to kind of decouple the U.S. economy and China. And I think this is like, you know, we don't import a whole lot of food. But what we do from China tends to be seafood, I guess. that seems to be a very big deal, very big issue because of the way these markets, these prices are determined, that trying to figure out, put up some kind of barrier, I don't even know what you would call a barrier or whatnot, but that it's safer to eat local and get it from sources here domestically.
Well, that's definitely true. I mean, you know, a lot of your shrimp imports are from Vietnam, China, South America, that sort of thing. And at least, you know, when you buy local, when you buy Alabama seafood, you know what you're getting. You're getting shrimp from the Gulf, and it's what you would – it's the same shrimp that you would buy from the guy that has a pickup truck parked on the side of the road selling it out of a cooler, you know. You're helping the local economy. You're helping those people that are relying on the seafood industry for their livelihood that spans generations going back. And I think it's important. I always encourage restaurants to buy local, to buy their seafood from Alabama seafood producers. And, you know, when you look for that when you go into a market, also look for American-made, well, not American-made, but American packaged produced shrimp, you know, or seafood fish as well.
But the restaurant industry, it struggles with the shutdown. That had to take a toll on the seafood industry there.
It did. It sure did. Because you know it kind of hit right at the wrong time, right during the middle of the season, and so you know it's. But that's starting to come back. People are going out. My wife and I went out last night to a Mexican restaurant in Theodore, and it was packed. You know, on a Monday night, and I think people just want to get out and want to buy and want to exercise their rights. Now we've had. Of course, you know, the flip side of the pandemic, of course, is the unemployment issue. We've had a serious rise in unemployment, and that's the bulk of the calls that I get. I actually, for the last several months, have been unemployment calls go along with the normal veterans calls and Medicaid issues and that sort of thing. But, yeah, unemployment's still a major issue in the way that the state has handled that.
Well, we had the mayor of Orange Beach on yesterday. He's talking about the difficulty in finding workers for those seasonal jobs. Do you have that dynamic with some of these seafood plants? And you know, that people are making more money sitting at home in front of a television than actually going to work. So you have a hard time finding the right labor.
It's something that needs to be looked at for sure, because you do have people that lost their jobs that don't want to go back to doing that right now because of the funds that are coming in for them. And on the other side of that too, though, you have the people that have lost their job and then want to go back to work and want to get back in the market and have tried and tried and tried to get unemployment benefits from the state and have struggled with that. I mean, you know, a case in particular, I had an individual that a constituent of mine that called me, this is several weeks ago, that had lost his job prior to the pandemic, and put him in the system. He got one check, and then they booted him out. And when he finally was able to get a hold of someone, they told him, oh, well, you were unemployed prior. We're only going to deal with people that lost their jobs during the pandemic. I mean, things like that, that's not right. I think
that's not what
you can't prepare. So the Labor Department couldn't prepare for a pandemic. I mean, that's just what you can't prepare for that.
They really were overwhelmed by this.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, we were five weeks in, and they're still trying to stand up a call center. I mean, things like that shouldn't have happened, in my opinion.
So, what I mean, is that something you guys got to look at? I mean, we might talk about this maybe later in the segment, you know, all the focus seems to be on taking executive power away from the governor or from the state health officer and maybe reining that in somewhat where the legislature has more of a role in it. But some of these institutions, some of these agencies that didn't function as well as they could have, is there anything that the legislature could do on that end to, like, maybe bolster it or make it better or make it function better?
I think so. I think it's worth taking a look at. I mean, one of the things that, you know, my background – I come from a strategic planning, you know, military side background, and while you can't plan for every possible event, I mean, you need to have in the works, if this happens, what will we do? How will we stand up a call center in so many days? How will we bring in extra staff? How will we, I mean, things like requiring individuals. I had people from my district that were driving to Montgomery and camping out all day in the parking lot at the labor department, hoping to be seen. You know, get there at 6 a.m. and they're still number 200 in line. That's not right. That is absolutely not right. That's things that you need to have a plan on. How do you deal with things regionally in each congressional district? And so I think things like that, along with executive power, will be looked at, and will definitely be looked at in February when we go in session.
Yeah, that one is it seems like a huge sore spot for a lot of people. The money was there. It was just a matter of getting the money in the right hands and distributing it. And it clearly, you know, obviously you can't plan for a pandemic. No one saw this coming. But, you know, all this focus on good times and making good times even better, we never war gamed that worst case scenario.
That's right. And you know, you have to – I think one of the first things you do is you look at what plans are there. What do we do in North Alabama when there's a tornado and people lose their livelihood for a couple of months? How do we help them? So why can't we take that type practice and expand it statewide and look at all of those things? I mean, because the thing is, as elected official, it's our job to look after those guys, in my opinion, to focus on the people that lost their job and are losing their job, and to not make it more difficult for them to get their compensation, but make it where it's easier for them to get their compensation, get back on their feet, and make a livelihood for themselves and for their family.
But it's even like, you know, a lot of people compare this to hurricane response, and we've never seen something like this, you know. But the best thing we could compare it to are some of the hurricanes, or the BP oil spill is another one. These are all things that you would have to deal with,
right?
You know, or should they ever happen again. Do you get the sense, though, that, you know, that there's something that could be learned from those experiences in the past? That is how you respond to a disaster, not what is going on right now.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head there, Jeff. I mean, one of the things that you do in planning is you look at what's worked, what hasn't worked, and then develop plans. And they need to be flexible plans, not so rigid where, okay, well, we're doing this statewide, but we're not seeing the unemployment issues in one part of the state, or we're not seeing, you know, whatever the issue is. But you have to be able to adapt and to think on the spot. And I just think in a lot of instances we haven't seen that. And I think that, you know, that's one of the things we definitely have to look at and change for in the future, because these kind of events, while albeit rare, they do happen. And, you know, it's going to happen again. I mean, it may be next year, it may be 100 years from now, but at some point, this type of situation is going to reoccur.
Yeah, where you got to have people stay at home, and you know, the schools and the education system, all of that. Because typically government is very reactive; they're not proactive. Do you get the sense that we'll be reacting to this for some time?
At least through the November election.
But even beyond that, I think there's a money to be spent or whatever that you can, you know, you can politicize this. Do you want this to happen again? And people will make more of this as a political wedge in the future.
Definitely. I mean, I think you're seeing this right now becoming. Now, if you'd asked me a year ago what would be the top issue in the presidential race, no one could have dreamed this. But, you know, coming in, I was listening to the radio, and you know, it was the Democrats hammering President Trump, and you know, that's becoming their issue.
All right, we're going to take a quick time out. We got one more segment with State Representative Chip Brown, so stay tuned for that. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.
The poets tell how Bon Jovi fell and left his living.
Hey, welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. So good to be with you on this Tuesday morning, almost afternoon. Coming up tomorrow on the program, real quick rundown, Heritage Foundation's Han von Spakowski. We're talking about mail-in voting, all the pitfalls of that. Also, State Senator David Sessions, looking forward to that. And what will be our usual Wednesday guest, Yellowhammer News' Sean Ross, will get caught up on things. My editor at Yellowhammer News, not only do I host a radio show, I write for Land Yap and Breitbart, but Yellowhammer News as well. So make sure you go check out yellowhammernews.com. Still with us for the remainder of the program is State Representative Chip Brown, represents District 105. Representative, the you might be tired of talking about face mask mandates and all of that, but I think it's just a bigger question. People kind of want to know. There's going to be a push to roll back some of this authority in these circumstances. What is that right balance where you don't take away too much of the governor's ability to act to certain circumstances, but you do want something in place to make sure that there's no overreach or it's not abused?
Well, you know, I think we're finding out what that balance is. I mean, one of the things down here on the coast we have to be careful about and keep in mind is that hurricanes and that that ability for the governor to declare a state of emergency for this area regarding hurricanes, because if you think back, Hurricane Frederick, Hurricane Ivan, Katrina, I mean, some of those lasted weeks, months. I mean, I remember as a child, Hurricane Frederick, I didn't go to school for weeks, and, you know, we didn't have power. I think we didn't have power for at least a month, for months, for some people.
Yeah.
That's right. And so that's hard to explain to people that aren't from the coast, you know. And from a safety standpoint, you have to balance that, too, after hurricanes with looting and that sort of thing. But I do think we really need to take a look at authority and what's the right balance. And what's the role of the state health officer in regards to being able to do mandates regarding health, masks, school closures, that sort of thing. I mean, what is his role? Because he is not a constitutionally elected individual.
No, he's appointed by a group of doctors that in some cases lobby you guys in the legislature, right? So, I mean, that kind of rubs people the wrong way because we pay taxes. We didn't vote for these mandates.
That's right.
I guess there's going to have to be something put in place, but that sounds like overhauling an entire system.
Well, I think it is definitely going to happen. I mean, it's definitely going to be looked at, but you have to remember, too, at the end of the day, the governor has the veto power. So,
but you can override a veto and down have a legislature pretty easily.
But, you know, it's going to be looked at, and it's going to be looked at from a power standpoint because, I am not a fan of big government. I'm not a fan of big government mandates. And really, if you look at the Alabama legislature, there's 77 Republicans in the legislature, and I can't speak for everyone, but we are a conservative state, and I think we're definitely going to look at that for sure.
But the goal would be, to me, it seems like giving that power to the locals. They know the situation in their communities. You have to anticipate they're going to act responsibly and they're going to do the right thing for their communities. But there just seems at the state level that, well, maybe we're not quite willing to trust the locals here. Is that
on an issue like, let's say, mask mandates, for example? I mean, you have parts of Alabama that, you know, everyone's been affected by the COVID-19 pandemic, but you have certain areas that are hotspots and certain areas that aren't. So I think you're taking the right approach where you look at what's right for, you know, Huntsville may not be right for slap out Alabama.
Right. Oh, we got to leave it there. I want to thank you for joining us. We'll do it again real soon. Guys, I got to get out of here. As always, you will stay tuned for Midday Mobile with the one and only Sean Sullivan. Woo! This has been the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.